Thank you very much, Jonathan. Now we have a few minutes. If anyone here would like either to make a comment on the presentations or generally on this amendment to the law, or if there are any questions for our presenters. Yes.
Hello. I was just wanting to ask a question about unjustifiable hardship, because it seems like people will be able to just bring that up and reduce the effectiveness of the Act no matter what changes are made. So I'm just interested, maybe Jonathan might be able to give us some input on that.
I think that unjustifiable hardship will start being more important because it now applies more generally. The Commission has certainly always pushed very strongly along the lines, and I know Graham previously made decisions on the issue of unjustifiable hardship, I think, stressing that that some amount of hardship, the concept connotes that some amount of hardship is to be expected, and that that's what service providers and government agencies will simply have to accept. So it will be a matter of hopefully having courts put a significant weight on the rights of people with disability to access goods and services, to be able to participate fully, rather than, I suspect, I don't know whether it's going to become particularly an issue for government with increasing budget cuts and funding squeezes, whether or not that's going to be increasingly a difficulty. But I think what you've said is clearly the case. That's going to be a significant issue, and I think it will be. I think there may be potential for things like the Disabilities Convention to be used to encourage courts to interpret that in a way that's consistent to ensure that what unjustifiable hardship means isn't watered down to become simply a reasonableness test, that it will actually have to be something that requires a level of hardship beyond common garden variety hardship, so that it is something that is actually unjustifiable.
Thanks. I just wanted to make a comment about unjustifiable hardship as well. I'm actually quite excited by some of the other changes to the definition of unjustifiable hardship, and that's that the court must consider the availability of financial and other assistance available to the respondent. And I think that's quite a significant change when I think about many applicants who, for example, are applying for jobs who may have a hearing impairment and are denied the position because the cost of an interpreter for meetings might be too much. This section will now require a respondent to look at financial assistance outside of the organisation in terms of the availability of interpreters through government programs, for example. So I actually think there are some good changes also to the definition of unjustifiable hardship for people with disability.
Thank you. Anyone else who's here?
Yes, hello. Will any current DDA complaints sitting with the Human Rights Commission that are lodged prior to August 5 that are awaiting conciliation be heard under the DDA prior to the August 5 or the changes after August 5?
But they will be heard on the old, under the old changes, so that the DDA has changed from the 5th of August and doesn't have a retrospective operation. The procedural change, though, that was made to the Human Rights, or the now the Australian Human Rights Commission Act, it's going to take me a very long time to get out of calling it the Human Rights and Equal Opportunity Commission Act. A procedural change was made to the Australian Human Rights Commission Act, which now allows people 60 days after termination of their complaint before the Commission to lodge in the Federal Court or the Federal Magistrates Court, and that does operate, I think, from the date of assent, which was 28 days before commencement. So that's the only thing that will operate prior to the 5th of August. I'm just getting the nod from the head of our complaint handling section.
Jonathan or Graham, I just had a question in relation to how you understand that the reasonable adjustments process might work. If there's an obligation on, as I understand it, on the complainant to identify what the reasonable adjustment is, does that require that it be identified prior to the lodging of the complaint? If halfway through somebody gets legal representation and some advice is given that perhaps this is a type of adjustment that you could have asked for and they'd failed to, do you have a view as to whether or not, as to how that might impact on the reasonable adjustment requirements?
That's a very good question. One of the things that I was considering when I was looking at how the indirect provisions will work is that you need to show that because of the disability, you can only comply, you can comply with the requirement of condition only if the discriminator made reasonable adjustments for the person. And one of my questions there is, if you say you should have made this reasonable adjustment, can the respondent say, aha, but you need to show that only that one would do and not any of the other possibilities? Now, I'm not sure whether that's actually how that will work, but I think that's something that we need to be, or that applicants might need to be careful of. And I'm not sure the answer to your question. I think I would have hoped that the courts would allow a person with a disability to, or accept that they are the best place to know what is going to work for them. Unfortunately, I'm not sure that confidence is well placed given the sometimes very, very technical way that courts have approached these issues.
Just to give one very simple example, it may be that the respondent is going to know how its operations are best suited, and so, for example, to change a public transport network is information that only a respondent can know whether or not that's available. I think it would be very difficult for an applicant to be required to say you need to run this train at this particular time, and then if you shift these three others to run on a separate line, then it could all be... that's, I think, practically very difficult for an applicant to even ever identify what a reasonable adjustment is.
I think that's right, and I guess the flip side will be also that if an applicant doesn't engage with the respondent may well then be able to say, well, look, this is an unjustifiable hardship because I can't possibly know what adjustment I may need to make. It's not clear to me also whether there will be whether in practice indirect discrimination and unjustifiable hardship will do substantially the same or different work. I suspect that reasonable adjustments, I think conceptually, is probably more about an individual saying, this is what I need to study, this is what I need to access your service, while indirect discrimination is more about the fact that there are stairs at the front of the building or the fact that the train is not accessible, which are changes that would benefit others. But there's nothing in the Act that says that's so I'm not sure how that issue will also play out, and I think will be another one to watch.
Any other questions before we finish? All right, well then we have actually run out of our allotted time, so could I thank everyone for coming this evening. Some very important amendments have been made to very important legislation, and so I think it's terrific that we've been able to hold this seminar, and could I thank Graham and Jonathan again for their extremely valuable presentations. But let's not close without again remembering the important partnership between the Commission and OSLI, which we hope will be a growing partnership. But we are extremely pleased that this valuable resource, which has been launched this evening, is now available, as I've said, free to the world. And for that, we have OSLI to thank. So thank you all for coming, and many thanks to OSLI.